A Rayo Original Podcast.
Beware Book contains references to sexual violence and murder, including in this episode, child sexual abuse and suicide, which some listeners might find upsetting.
Yours was an extraordinary campaign of sexual violence carried out in a single-minded pursuit of your sexual desires.
The 28th of February, 2024, the day a packed gallery at the High Court in Glasgow watched on as Ian Packer was finally jailed for the murder of Emma Caldwell.
The trauma you caused has led to suffering which has endured for decades. For years, you lied time and again before you were undone by your arrogance.
The day a heartbroken family finally came face to face with Emma's killer. The day justice was finally served after a torturous 19-year wait.
During the trial, Emma's mum, Margaret, explained how she spent weeks searching the streets of Glasgow high and low for her daughter. In a victim statement, she said she's overwhelmed with grief, depression and anxiety, causing a strain on family relationships. She says it's a day she thought might never come.
The serial rapist was sentenced to at least 36 years behind bars for Emma's murder and for a string of horrific attacks on other women.
Over more than 25 years, you pursued a campaign of violence and appalling sexual mistreatment of a very large number of women. You have caused great harm to so many people as you indulged your pathologically selfish and brutal sexual desires.
Join us to hear from those most impacted by his sadistic and violent attacks, his victims.
It was pretty terrifying, that, and then what I would get for saying that he was on the bed was pretty terrifying as well. Then I had to go to school.
This guy was a regular of mine, but at night time he never picked me up. I think I was kind of cheeky and bold, and Emma wasn't. This is fucking up, Nina. Emma wasn't like me. Nope.
And from the officers who went through hell to finally put him behind bars for good.
I get diagnosed with complex PTSD. During the treatment for that, it went back to this case, to that moment where I was discredited, to where I was called a liar.
As we ask just how prolific a predator was Ian Packer.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's done more and he hasn't been caught for it yet.
I'm Colette McGonagall.
And I'm Callum McQuaid.
And this is episode 5 of Beware Book.
I'll never forget the moment Ian Packer was sentenced. He didn't give away any emotion, not a hint of reaction, as he was told he'd likely die in prison. It was his victims and their loved ones who showed the most feeling. And the extent of his crimes will stay with me for years.
Yours was an extraordinary campaign of sexual violence carried out in a single-minded pursuit of your sexual desires, leaving no room for the wishes or well-being of the women you abused. You did this in almost every sphere of your life. You would look for vulnerability and exploit it.
But why did it take so long to get to this point, at one of Scotland's highest profile courts in the heart of Glasgow city centre?
Opened in 1814, it sits in an area known as the Salt Market, named because of its past as a bustling trading place for salt, fish and even whale meat. It faces the entrance to Glasgow Green, which is a sprawling space gifted to the people by Bishop Turnbull in 1450, making it the city's oldest park by some way. But the site of its entrance, the imposing stone pillars known as Maclennan Arch, symbolise a darker past. Formerly known as Jail Square, it was where crowds would gather to watch public hangings until 1865, when the gruesome practice was moved to the nearby Trongate. Across the road, the courthouse itself is fronted by a Grecian columned entrance. Its grandeur is set off by a distinctive Glasgow City crest carved on the smooth sandstone to the right of its entrance, a threshold both Callum and I have crossed many times to report on some of the country's most serious and compelling crimes, few that would match the consequence of this case.
But why did it take almost two decades to get to this point? Well, in the last episode, you heard about the bungled police investigation into Emma's death, as senior officers funneled resources into an expensive surveillance operation focused on a group of men who often paid for sex at a Turkish cafe in Glasgow city centre. How this operation would eventually collapse because of a lack of evidence, a great expense and great embarrassment to Strathclyde Police. And while a small number of officers never gave up their belief that Ian Packer was guilty, their superiors were having none of it.
But was there a much earlier opportunity to stop Ian Packer from becoming the monster who killed Emma? One even before he started using prostitutes regularly from the age of just 18, before he would trawl the drag or pay for sex at late-night saunas in Glasgow, when he first started showing signs he might have been capable of murder. For that, we need to speak to someone who knew Ian Packer growing up, someone who knew what he was like in his younger years.
Just for labels, please.
Magdalene Clare Robertson. I was the youngest and the first victim in the Ian Packer trial that related to Emma Caldwell murder.
So Magdalene was Ian Packer's first known victim. He raped her in her family home when she was just 15. We've interviewed Magdalene, or Maggie, several times. First, remotely.
Kind of struggling to hear you, Colette. Can you hear Colette?
No.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah, that's it now.
And eventually in person, in our studio on a bright January morning.
Hi, how are you doing? Nice
Hello,
to meet
Colette.
You.
Hello, Colette. Nice to meet you. Hi, Callum.
Oh, it's
nice
cold
to
this
meet
morning,
you.
Isn't
it's
it?
It's a bit cold. She's nice and warm.
Magdalene greets us with a tight, confident handshake and a friendly smile. She works all over the world on offshore projects and has flown home to Glasgow to spend some time with family. And very kindly, she shares a little of that time with us.
How was your flight last night? And you just
flight was good. Came in late last night.
Shall we go inside? It's
yes, let's
cold.
Go inside. It's getting cold.
Yeah.
Oh, it's nice and warm.
So we might jump around a bit here, and the sound quality of our interviews might vary too. There are a couple of other things we should tell you about Magdalene. She's forensic in her record keeping and has sent over a lot of information since her first Zoom meeting. I often wonder if this is the influence of her job. She manages large teams and carries out her work methodically and meticulously. But does it also help her cope in some way with experiencing such trauma? We trade many early morning and late night messages and calls. Magdalene from far-flung destinations and me usually from my kitchen table. And she's so sharp and matter-of-fact as she talks us through how Ian Packer groomed and attacked her. How she wasn't taken seriously, first by her family, then by police. That I often have to remind myself she was just a child when she met him, when she first became the target of his violence and depravity.
I get asked to sum up Ian in one word. I said he was an incubus. It doesn't matter if you believe in demonic things or not believe it. It's not about that. It's about a description. So he's really somebody that sucks the absolute life and the joy out of any circumstance whatsoever.
An incubus, as Magdalene describes Ian Packer there, is defined by the Cambridge Dictionary as a male evil spirit believed to have sex with women while they're sleeping. Truly horrendous thought, considering Magdalene was just 14 when Packer started a relationship with one of her relatives.
He pursued her relentlessly, the first time at her parents' home, when he lured her into the living room while others slept, pushed her to the ground and tried to take off her clothes. But when she told the adults in her life, she wasn't believed. Packer became bolder and his behaviour escalated.
And in your own home too, what should have been your safe space, you know, that must have just been so heartbreaking to think that I can't get away from this man.
No, I couldn't. He was allowed in. I used to wake up and he'd be sitting at the bottom of my bed. I couldn't get him out. I'd shout, he's at the bottom of my bed. And I get shouted at. Why are you letting him sit there? Oh God, what do you do? What do you do? You can't reason with that type of logic. What do you do? You can't understand it. You don't even try to understand it. What do you do? You just get on with it.
You described him as an incubus.
Yeah.
You know, we've heard some really awful descriptions of this man. I just can't imagine how terrifying that would have been.
Yeah. It's because you're not safe. You can't go to sleep. And then he sits in your bed and you shout, you're getting into trouble either way. It was pretty terrifying. That and then what I would get for saying that he was on the bed was pretty terrifying as well. Then I had to go to school.
Magdalene was just 15 when Ian Packer raped her in 1990, in her own bed with other family members in the home at the time.
He was taking a known risk. So he knew my dad wasn't there. He knew my mum didn't believe me. He knew that his mum and dad came up to my house to threaten me, to tell me to stop accusing him otherwise that I'm going to be punished. So he knew that all these things were in place. So there was there was all known risks. And that's where he seemed to go, where it was okay. As people let him away with it. His parents let him away with it.
What sort of impact did that have on you, that nobody stood up for you? How did that feel?
Oh, it was frustrating. I was suicidal. I didn't think I had any chance to be anything in life or go anywhere or do anything. I always knew I deserved better. That was okay. I knew that, and I knew it wasn't my fault. But it was absolutely frustrating. All I could do is shout, shout, shout. In fact, my brother, younger brother, who I'm really, really well with just now, he was saying that at that time, he says, I didn't know what was going on. And he was a wee, and he just says, I just wanted you to stop saying stuff all the time. He says, but now I actually know what's happened. He says, I would have stood up for you if I understood and knew. But yeah, it was quite tough. So I left house really, really young, since I could. And that meant I had bad relationships. But that wasn't just down to Packer. It was down to the people in my life not looking after me properly. That they've got to take some responsibility too. But Packer would only ever go where there was known risk.
Do you think your mum was manipulated by him as well then?
Yeah, totally, totally. I mean, he is psychopathic. You have to understand that. There's no human side to him. And as a psychopath, the psychopaths, what they'll do is they will manipulate people and they'll tell them what they want to hear. They'll build confidence in them. So he was a gifted little psychopath in those ways.
I feel sick as Magdalene's telling us about what Ian Packer was like in his younger years, when he attacked her repeatedly, tearing her world and family apart. How he operated, measuring vulnerability in young girls who he felt didn't have anyone to protect them. The adults that were around, he'd tell them what they wanted to hear, manipulate them into believing his dangerous lies. Magdalene's been subjected to heinous abuse by Packer, and what she tells us points to the fact that she'd been failed by so many people. Her own family, Packer's parents, who she says covered up for him, enabled him, which allowed his attacks to fly under the radar.
I don't believe that I was the first one. Not at all. Because the first time when he went to try and attack me, it was kind of, he knew what he was doing. He's been offended, I swear to it, he'd be offending well before he even attacked me. There was also a point of a school child was shouting up to the door, Ian's my boyfriend. Where is she? Where is she? 14, 13 years old, where is she? She wasn't named. Don't even know who she was. Don't even know if it was investigated. So there's somebody else before, or somebody else younger than me. There's all the other people in my network that he approached when we were younger. There was a lot of them. There was basically every female, any young female, that wasn't fully protected or didn't have their parents with them or didn't have somebody with them that seemed like to guard them or such. He was in there. I wasn't the first. There's many forgotten and people that didn't come forward. You think about it, the amount of sex workers that have came forward, even if you look at the percentage of people who would actually come and report sexual assaults, if you take that into account, how many would it be? How many hundreds would it be?
So Packer was already able to manipulate those around him, to hide in plain sight. Even at this early stage of his life, he'd now managed to successfully dodge Magdalene's determined accusations thanks to a lack of support from the adults in her life. And this made him bolder. It encouraged his behaviour to escalate. to the level that would bring him to Limefield Woods on that cold, dark night when Emma Caldwell met her death. But here comes another missed opportunity. Magdalene did speak to police about Ian Packer. She says they called her in 2005 as part of the initial investigations into Emma Caldwell's death, and she told them exactly what he was like and that he'd raped her all those years before.
How do your thoughts on the way police handled the situation compare with Ian Packer himself? You know, is it almost like doubling down on the crime then?
It was worse because Ian Packer didn't have a duty of care under the law. You're not allowed to commit crimes, but you didn't have a specific duty or swear an oath under the law. These people did. Ian Packer didn't promise me anything, didn't want anything, but the police did. A professional sense, we had a commitment, we had a contract really. The police said that they were going to investigate the crime, and they said that they were going to do that, and they had a statutory duty under the law, and they didn't do it. So they didn't uphold their end of the bargain.
On top of all the warnings surrounding Ian Packer, he'd admitted to police to regularly paying Emma for sex. Witnesses had even told officers he'd raped her behind a billboard in the months before her death. In fact, he spoke with police a total of six times between 2005 and 2007, eventually admitting to taking Emma to the remote location where she was killed. He was able to live under the radar for years, attacking more women. So what changed to propel Packer into the spotlight? To tell you that, we need to speak again to crime reporter Norman Sylvester, who scans us in at his place of work.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, Norman. Nice to see you.
Okay.
We meet at the modern Silver Building, right in the heart of Glasgow's business district.
Okay. Just through here.
Not too far at all from an area that used to be known as the Drag. And as we sit down, he starts to tell us about how the media played a role in finally bringing Ian Packer back on the police's radar.
The Turks had been exonerated, and it was kind of maybe back to square one, but we weren't aware then of any new investigation. And in 2015, the Daily Echo's sister paper, the Sunday Mail, received information about Packer and published an article identifying him as a forgotten suspect.
And how important then was this forgotten suspect press coverage then in really putting the pressure back on police? As you say, when the case against the Turkish men fell through, there was a gap before this appeared in the press. How much of a role did that play in bringing Ian Packer back to the fore and putting pressure on police to take him seriously as a suspect?
It was quite a sensational revelation, you know, about this forgotten suspect, and it did prompt the police to carry out this fresh investigation. There was also a kind of, at the early stages within Police Scotland at the time, the recently formed Police Scotland, a kind of, there was a bit of a witch hunt to find out who'd leaked the information. But in reality, this was a closed inquiry, and, you know, the information came out via officers who were no longer in the force. So nobody really was leaking. But I think it was a reaction from the police, maybe overreaction at the time. And then that prompted the new investigation, which, you know, went back to square one, had the original interviews and officers who'd done the interviews with Packer. And then they built a very compelling case around that.
In light of this scrutiny, the country's Lord Advocate then ordered police to reopen inquiries into Packer, and a new investigation was launched just months after these articles appeared in 2015, 10 years after Emma was killed. But it was Packer's own actions a couple of years later that would seal the deal.
2018, as the pressure was growing in Packer, mainly through Sunday Mail stories and others, they approached the BBC and did a rather kind of almost bizarre interview where he volunteered, yes, you know, that he was a suspect, but it wasn't him. And that kind of added further fuel to the fire.
This arrogance reminds me of what Lord Beckett said during Packer's sentencing, the clip we heard right at the start of this episode. The fact he'd lied time and time again, only to be eventually undone by his own ego. The resulting interviews only served to shine a spotlight more brightly on him, until a big development came in February 2022.
Clyde One.
Next, a man's been charged in connection with the murder of 27-year-old Emma Caldwell, who vanished from Glasgow almost 20 years ago. She's due to appear in court on Monday. It's strange hearing that back. This would probably have been the first time I'd covered Emma Caldwell's murder as a journalist. And I remember it coming across the desk. A man finally being charged with the murder of a young woman from Glasgow so many years before. Not really knowing the interest it would spark across the country or in us.
And then almost 2 years later, the date victims and family members had waited almost 20 years for came when key witnesses could finally have their say.
I actually quite enjoyed court. It was a cathartic experience for me, getting to talk about it. However, as one of the main police witness, I was called back 4 or 5 times to talk about my involvement in different parts of the inquiry. So I was there a lot, giving evidence a lot, being questioned and cross-examined a lot.
What was it like to see Emma's family, her friends, the people in her life that had also been on this really torrid quest for justice? All of your lives had been impacted so much by this man and by the police in general's failure to take this seriously.
I knew we had all been in something together. I felt I was in this alone. For all these years, I was alone. And no one else was there for me. So this was something I had to get through. It was nice at court to be able to put faces to names and to meet people who I had been told about in statements, things like that. And there was a kind of camaraderie in the court, you know, we're going for coffee and we're waiting for the jury to come up with their verdict. You know, we're sitting and there's people are blethering, there's chitter-chatter about what's going to happen. Is it going to be today? And it went on and it went on. So there was a kind of bond there. But overall, I was on my own and I was in the box on my own. The last 20 years, I was on my own. So that's how I felt. I was determined to give the best evidence I could to get the right outcome.
And others felt this way too, that it was a relief to finally be there, to be heard, and even go toe-to-toe with a formidable defence team, as Magdalene tells us.
So I could have went all day with him, with the defence. It didn't faze me. The attention came to the police being the real criminals and the Crown being the real criminals was much more on the forefront. He was a criminal, but they were the ones that I was after.
I'm quite interested by the fact that you see that as just kind of another step to holding the authorities accountable. Do you think that has helped to shift the focus and maybe turn the tide?
Yeah, it has, because the police admitted a fault and gave an apology.
And I know that Ronnie Vannucci had quite a few run-ins with different witnesses during the trial. How would you describe the way he spoke to you?
Oh, he was fine. He did slate me a little bit, but he was just doing his job. The fact is that he was upholding justice, and I can't imagine it being very easy for him and his team to have that client, just for the fact is that they dealt with him and all the things they had to find out and sift through. It's only commendable that somebody did that. That's going to be in their life for years. That'll be in their head for years. Yeah, good for them. I think they should only be thanked for what they've done.
But there were no guarantees Packer would finally be punished for his chilling crimes. It also meant everyone had to go back over very difficult memories and then go through the excruciating wait for the verdict.
See, when we were in the court, I asked one of the turnkeys downstairs, what's he doing? He said he thinks he's getting away with it and he's sleeping. I could have fucking died. I don't mean it. I was raging, really.
But it must bring so many emotions, especially seeing him. bringing it all.
Oh, he was horrible and he drank so many glasses of water. Did you notice that? Bastard, I thought, don't be drowning that, but really, I didn't want him to drown. I might send him a wee letter to Berlin. Brick. Just saying.
Claire talking us through how she felt while waiting for the verdict. With several very serious charges against him, the jury had lots to consider. But then, after four long days of deliberations, the moment was finally here.
He'd been found guilty of the murder of Emma Caldwell and a large number of other very serious crimes. For murder, the sentence is fixed by law. You will be sentenced to life imprisonment.
And for one family, almost 20 long and painful years of waiting were put to an end.
What does this moment feel like to be at this stage that you've been waiting so long for?
I feel relieved. Not overjoyed, not elated. No punching the ear or opening champagne. I just feel relieved. It's over with after all this time.
What was it like going to the trial and giving your evidence?
I was very nervous about that. I got through it. I got through it all right.
How did you feel listening to what's being said over the last few weeks?
That was very difficult because you have to listen to things that you don't want to listen to and rather wasn't said. But you've just got to sit through it and hope for the best. Yes, I just had to keep going. I had to do something for Emma. And then my husband passed away and the last thing he said was, keep going.
And what does the future hold?
Sorry, I just need a minute.
Of course.
I want to spend time with my grandchildren. They're so important to me. They mean everything in this world to me. But also, going forward, I was very disappointed in how the police handled this case, and I'd like a full inquiry.
That was Margaret Caldwell, Emma's mum, speaking to me outside of court. You can hear the pain as she talks about sitting through the trial, all the really difficult evidence she had to listen to, the years of turmoil and the brutal loss of her daughter. But as I was sitting with her, I was also struck by her determination to keep pursuing justice, even promising her husband on his deathbed she wouldn't give up. And she still hasn't. She wants the police to be held to account for their mistakes. Something she has in common with another of Ian Packer's victims.
If I, as the rule says, I was going to sue the police. And if I won, I'd give all the money to Emma Caldwell's mum.
Did you get much time to speak to her at court?
No, I didn't speak to her at all. She said that she wanted to come to the case when I was given evidence. And I've kept on saying to her, look, I'll take you out for dinner or I'll treat you or come up and see me. But she's not said yes yet, but I know that she wants to come.
What would you say to her if and when you do meet?
I think it would just be quite natural. I think she would talk about Emma. She'd maybe talk about her grandkids. She might have questions, I don't know.
Do you think it would be helpful to you or to her or maybe both?
Oh, I'm not sure, maybe. I don't know, maybe too much for her to meet me. Yeah, I think so. She's been through enough. She's a poor soul.
Magdalene there talking about how she wants to sue police for the mistakes made during the Emma Caldwell investigation, including not pursuing her allegation of rape against Ian Packer in 2005. So even though he has now been convicted of Emma's murder, not everyone feels justice has been fully served.
Remember too that he was convicted of 33 charges in total of sexual and physical violence against 22 different women between 1990 and 2016. His list of victims included 16 sex workers, women he lived with, guests at adult sex parties, and his first target, 15-year-old Magdalene, who he raped in her own home. The verdict was, of course, welcomed by many, but by no means an end to this story.
Even for me, being outside of it, It just makes me so angry that how many people have been impacted and how many people, like, you are still living with what he did.
You know, it was sad as well. The ladies are no longer here, they get an up proven for that. Why? Because they're dead. I'll speak for them. He'll never get out, I don't think. Do you?
Doubt it. Be very surprised. What was the term? 36 years minimum, I think.
36, and what did he get for us? He gets that and then something else. 36 and something else, can't remember.
Can't remember. But yeah, I would be surprised if he ever got out. I think, like, having been there and sat through the trial, it was a real watershed moment, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, seeing all those women giving evidence, and you could just feel the height of emotion every single day.
It was horrible. Horrible.
Inside the court and also out in the hall as well. You could just feel it.
There was people went to school with him there.
Mm.
I was like, and a woman was there, her mum was a school teacher, speaking about this creep. So he's been a creep all his life.
So there are still plenty of unanswered questions then. As Claire says, there is testimony to suggest Ian Packer's behaviour was worrying well before he ever met Emma or any of the other women he attacked, even before he raped Magdalene in 1990.
And what about all the years following the known attacks on Magdalene before Emma's murder, or of the almost two decades he lived freely after killing her? How do we begin to get our heads around what the consequences of that actually might have been?
We've spoken to other victims ourselves of attacks at the hands of Packer. He was free for such a long time. Do you think that we can realistically know the extent of his offending?
No. Short answer. I think there's a lot more to be found out about Ian Packer. Personally, I don't think it was his first murder. I think there's going to be more found out in the future. I would love to be involved in something to do with that. But I think there's far more to it. There's a pattern of behaviour here. As we discovered during the trial, which is now common knowledge, he did the same thing to several girls. Although Emma was the only one we know of at this time who was murdered. I see no reason for there not to be more.
And former detective Stuart Hall is not the only one.
I'm just glad they got him. I'm so grateful that they got him. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's done more and he hasn't been caught for it yet.
Could have murdered him more as well. I think he would have, yeah. Because I think he thinks he was that smart ass to get away with all that time.
Anne McElveen from the charity Salt and Light again there. We've heard from her a few times now. Anne Clare, two people who knew exactly how Ian Packer operated and who think he could have hurt more women, maybe even killed them. But can we just leave that question hanging in the air? Another victim of Packer, Magdalene, thinks not.
He's travelling everywhere, he's going to different places, he's in a white van, he's working in a community, he's got contracts, the family had contracts with local governments. Can you believe that? He had access, worked in schools with children with disabilities and adults with learning difficulties, he worked in there. That's silent, aren't they? How are they going to tell what's going on? He had absolute access to different people.
That's quite a scary thought, that Ian Packer was living free and unchecked in the community. Magdalene claims he was working with vulnerable people during that time, and something else that no one has considered before too.
They've always went to Florida. Boxing Day, they went there every year for 2 years. So he's been attacking people because you don't be a serial rapist and sexual offender and to say, ach, I'm on holiday from that. Your habits go with you. If you smoke, you don't stop smoking when you go on holiday. If anything, you feel a bit more relaxed about your vices, don't you? So he would have been definitely within there.
the sex clubs or the strip clubs or what have you there as well, and he's probably abusing people in the hotel. I make that assumption. I would bet money on it.
I remember speaking to Callum straight after I got off that call with Magdalene. It just stopped me where I was. Of course, I knew Ian Packer had lived a life of freedom for almost 20 years after murdering Emma. Even had thoughts of him travelling up and down the country in his van. But why had I never thought of him boarding a plane for holiday, being completely free to go wherever he wanted in the world? And at the same time, it's such an obvious thought. He was living a normal life, certainly not in the way he behaved, but in the freedoms he had.
And when we did talk about this, we realised that of course he would be going on holiday, that there was nothing and no one to stop him. He could go to places where nobody would know him, where he would probably feel more relaxed and more able to indulge in his vices. So we asked Magdalene about it again when we met up at the studio.
I hadn't even thought about it until you mentioned that there is the fact of going to Florida and being around all these children and young people. Yeah, that's so scary in itself, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, can you imagine that? Plus, there's also the adult places that he would go to. We also know from the court case he used to join the sex clubs and he used to take it too far with the people who were already open-minded. He took it too far with them, even though they would express what they were into. And he could have got somebody who was into what he was into. But no, he had to go and muck that one up too. But there was also he got into debt with the massage clubs, with prostitutes and the massage clubs. How can you get into debt for that? So we do know that obviously he had a serious problem. We know that he's committed so many rapes he's been convicted of. And there's all the other potential victims that we haven't heard about. But yeah, it's reasonable cause to believe that he would have attacked people in the States, in Florida. That's a good chance.
That's Magdalene there talking about what came out about Ian Packer during Emma's murder trial. That he used to go to saunas and sex clubs and use prostitutes. Not occasionally, but a lot. To the point of getting into debt. And that he used to attack women in these places too. So, is it reasonable to think he wouldn't stop this behaviour on holiday either? Crime reporter Norman Sylvester doesn't think Packer could control his urges.
You would have to think that Ian Packer is somebody who has committed other offences. Maybe not just in Glasgow, but maybe elsewhere. You know, he was running a business. He had access to a van. You know, he would travel. You know, this is a guy who had an almost addiction to violence against women. You know, he wasn't the occasional offender. He was doing it on a serial and industrial scale. So it wouldn't surprise me if Packer, there was other victims out there, and he'll probably never be released from prison. So no danger of ever returning to society, but it would be interesting to know if there are other women out there, you know.
Are there more women out there? Retired detective Stuart Hall also thinks it's likely there will be many more victims, both here and abroad.
When people go on holiday, they go on holiday to relax, to let their hair down, to, you know. So I don't see him going to stop any pattern of behaviour. That's who he is. And his campaign of violence towards women, that goes beyond, way beyond my involvement. You know, prior to that, when he was a younger man, also came out in the trial, he was violent towards women. So that just seems to be who he is, how he deals with life and women. So, absolutely. There'll be more in this country and, I think, wherever he's holidayed.
But while it may have come as a bit of a shock to us, do police already have suspicions Ian Packer's horrendous attacks might have been taking place in other countries too? Magdalene certainly thinks so.
2015, they took it to Spain. Their investigations, I don't know why and I don't know how it was, but they had a reason to go to Spain to question people.
So that's something that's been passed on to you, that they were definitely in Spain as part of an investigation?
No, I know that he was in Spain because the police told me that they were going to Spain as part of their investigation. I don't know why they would tell me anything like that.
I think they were quite excited, as if they were given a job to do, and they weren't really of that level to do that type of job before.
So we need to know more. Magdalene's saying police officers were set to travel to Spain as part of their investigations into Ian Packer back in 2015. The inquiry that would finally bring him to court. Did anything come of this? We'll need to do some digging on that. And are police looking into the US allegations? What we should say here is that there is an upcoming public inquiry on the investigation into Emma Caldwell's murder. So Police Scotland say they can't comment on anything around this case until that's finished. Although Magdalene says after what she's been through, she's happier taking it into her own hands.
So the person I spoke to in the FBI was really, really polite. I told them the situation. We went over it from the beginning right to the end. He took down details of the police. He took the details of the court case. The court case was going on at the time. And he took information down.
Magdalene also tells us that she felt more valued and listened to on that call with an FBI officer than she ever did during her interviews with police over here. Also that she finds it so frustrating Packer was allowed to travel unrestricted for so long.
But isn't there an alliance between the UK in America? Isn't there an alliance there about allowing murderers and paedophiles to travel? Isn't there some sort of agreement there? So maybe that's where it is. Maybe the duty is there between the countries. Does Scotland not owe a duty of care to the states?
So while we'll take all these allegations to Police Scotland too, the upcoming public inquiry makes it very difficult to pursue the official route, for the moment anyway. But that doesn't put Magdalene off when we tell her.
I think we're about 2 inches away from finding out what's happened in the States. I just really need to find out exactly where he was in Florida, and then I'm going to hire a private investigator. That's really what I want to do. I just need to find out that little bit of information. So if anybody's got information to tell me exactly where he used to go in Florida, it would be really good if Packer's mum and dad would divulge that information. Where were your house? Where did you stay? Just tell us where you stayed. I'll hire an investigator and I'll show your son is attacking people in the States.
She also thinks there are certain things about Ian Packer that would make him really easy to identify.
He didn't wash. He wasn't very clean. That was a long time ago, but I think everybody else has reported that he's not been really particularly clean after that. Plus, he smoked. So he stunk of cigarettes he smoked. He was small, looked like a Neanderthal. And he's very, very stocky. So he's got an extremely wide neck and he's very strong. So I think he's very distinctive. Plus, his accent would have stood out as well. We got lots of photos that could be shared, and I don't know why the police have just not handed that over, that information, to the States. We don't know anything about it. I've never heard of it being over there. Maybe they have, but I highly doubt it. This predator going to the Florida where all the children are and Disneyland. Yeah.
It's really hard to get your head around just how much damage Ian Packer has done to so many different people. From Emma, who he brutally killed and callously left her body in remote woodland while her friends and family frantically searched for her. Magdalene, who he sexually assaulted at the age of 14 and raped at the age of 15 in her own family home. To Claire, who he attacked and sexually assaulted, who mercifully refused to go long distances with him or get into the back of his van.
Do you know what really hurt me seeing I seen Emma's mum? How much she's aged. I know her age, but I knew this was with sadness and grieving and worrying and what happened, and that made me sick.
Just the talk.
I was ready to jump that, you know, where he was sitting before the judge came in and he told me to shut up, sit down. But it's not nice. Like, that woman, I don't think she will live long. I think she's got what she needed and she's dead and ready to start green again. Nah. I don't know what to say now, that's it.
And of course, Emma's mum, Margaret, who Claire is talking about there. There are just so many other victims, perhaps some who we don't even know about. How was he able to get away with such violence for so long? Well, he did have help, whether it was people in his life who excused or ignored his escalating behaviour, adults who enabled him or took his side over their own children, and senior police who ruled him out as a suspect for so long, leaving a lasting impact on the officers who swore he was indeed a murderer.
For such a long time, I tried to forget about the case. People would try and talk to me occasionally when I bump into someone, and I take a reaction, I go blotchy, or I get angry when I talk about it. It really affects me deeply.
That's retired officer Stuart Hall there, who says the consequences were devastating for so many different people.
One morning, I was getting ready to go to work, and I was sitting on the end of my bed, and I was getting dressed, and I was crying, putting my socks on, at the thought of having to go in and face people again. I'm not making this about me, I don't want to make this about me. In 2018, I get diagnosed with complex PTSD. During the treatment for that, I went back to this case, to that moment where I was discredited, to where I was called a liar, to where I was taken off the Packer side of it. That's as much as I want to say a bit about my, it's not about me. But that's, when you get that, it's not something that you go for counselling and it goes away. You always have it. Perhaps it makes you a bit more aware of it and your reactions to things and how you deal with things. I did become angry. I believe this case changed me.
We want to know, has anything really changed since Packer's conviction? What is Glasgow like now? Are those living and working on its streets really any safer? In the next episode, we'll take you on a walk through the city's red light district, known as the Drag.
I saw lasses and women getting stabbed, slashed, severely beat up. It's really not nice. Not nice at all. Especially when you see teenage girls. It's horrible. It's not a nice sight to see at all.
How do you feel when you're on your own out in the street and...
scared.
So that's next time on Beware Book, the story of a string of women brutally murdered in Glasgow, most of whose cases are still unsolved by police decades later. All the cases we've covered so far, Diane, Marjorie, Jacqueline, Tracy and Emma, were initially investigated by Strathclyde Police. This was replaced by a national force in 2013 called Police Scotland. In a statement, Police Scotland say they acknowledge the pain and the distress suffered by the families and also say none of their unresolved murder investigations would ever be closed.
If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in this podcast and need mental health support or want to talk about your feelings, visit the Hub of Hope to find services in your area. If you think you might have information about any of the people we mentioned, you can get in touch with us at bewarebook@bowermedia.co.uk.
Beware Book was written, created and presented by me, Colette McGonigal. Presented and produced by Callum McQuaid. The executive producer is Henrietta Harrison. Sound design is by James Stodd and Michelle Holman. Beware Book is a Rayo original podcast by Bower Media.